Jane Bailey Bain is an anthropologist and author. She was born in the USA and grew up in Geneva. She studied psychology at Oxford University and anthropology at the London School of Economics. Jane has lived and travelled extensively around the world. She's interested in stories and the way we use them to make sense of our lives. She currently teaches in West London. Life Works is her first book. Drawing on a combination of sense, sensibility, and ancient wisdom, it shows the relevance of mystic themes and archetypal figures to the modern world. Jane, thank you so much for joining us today. One of the things that really strikes me about your book when I read it is the multiplicity of uses for your work. But first of all, can you outline for those listening what you feel the core of your subject is in Life Works?
Well, I'm interested in stories and how we use them to make sense of our lives. Life Works is about the stories that recur around the world from different times and different places. And one of the things that you'll notice when you listen to stories again and again is that the same figures occur in stories from everywhere. The hero, the princess, the good mother, wise man. We recognize these characters when we encounter them. From the moment that that tall, hooded figure appears on the scene, we'll have preconceptions about the role that he's going to play in the story. Now, these characters that recur again and again are based on universal figures that the psychologist Carl Jung called archetypes. Archetypes are...
Sorry, no, carry on.
And to talk a little bit about archetypes, because they're key to how we make our stories. And I think they're key to how we make both our personal stories when we're creating our own lives and the stories that we write when we create a work of fiction. Archetypes are prototypical figures that Jung said arise spontaneously in the human psyche. They're forms or figures that seem to be innately present in the minds of even the very youngest children. In other words, we're pre-programmed to perceive these figures, these stereotypical characters, whenever we encounter them. They're the human equivalent of instincts in animals, and they consist of outlined shapes, constellations of attributes. Now, we fill in their individual features on the basis of our personal experience, and that's where our personal stories come in.
So, in terms of your own interest in this, Jane, because I can see there's so many ways, obviously, that this can be of use to writers, and we'll talk about that. But just to get a sense of how you first developed an interest in the importance of myth and archetypes. Where did that begin for you, that seed of interest?
I used to work for a number of years in third world development. I was what's called a social development advisor, so I would go out to projects in developing countries and look at how they affected people, not just evaluating them in terms of economic criteria. So things like gender and caste and ethnicity. Quite often people in poor communities don't want to talk in the first person. They're worried that if they say, I don't think this is working, that people will point the finger of blame at them if the international funding is taken away. So rather than talk in the first person, rather than say, I think this, I feel that, they'll use a story to convey information to you. So a typical example would be, supposing we've built a well in a village, and I might go out on a evaluation mission, and we'd drive into the village and we'd see the women sashaying off to the river with jars on their heads. Mm-hmm. And so we'd think, something wrong here. So that evening I'd have a meeting, get the women together, and I'd say, listen, you've got a brand new well in the middle of the village. Why are you still walking down to the river for your water? And there'd be a long, embarrassed silence. And then one of the older women would say, once upon a time, there was a village. The well was dug there between the headman's house and the mosque. The men used the water to wash their feet before prayer. And you think, the stories convey really important truths about people's lives.
It's really interesting as well because it makes us think about the importance of stories for all of us in these communities and in how people communicate, but also just what the role of storytelling is for us now as writers. You know, I suppose it's sort of getting to the core of why we tell why we tell stories effectively. And I wonder what your view is about just in general the importance of storytelling in our community or in our society, because I know that it's very easy for people to sort of write off myths as some myths, for example, as something not relevant to us.
I think there's two very, very important things there. There's the stories that we hear and the stories that we tell. In terms of the stories that we hear, I think that to call something a myth is actually the highest compliment that you can pay it, because a myth is a story that is so good that it's survived countless retellings and been passed down the ages. It's a story that really works. Mm. And so those mythic themes are some of the best stories in the world. In terms of the stories that we tell, I think that they are a vital part of our existence, whether we tell them verbally to friends in conversation or whether we as writers put them down on paper to communicate to other people. Lots of other animals communicate. Honeybees do their waggle dance to say where honey is, for example. Dogs bark a warning. But humans are the only species that actually construct stories. I would say that telling stories is the thing that makes us uniquely human.
Mm. I think that's really interesting as well in relation to, I think, how we view ourselves as writers, because I know as writers it can be very easy to get very caught up in thoughts about publication and, you know, looking at publication in relation to our self-worth, for example. But actually, you know, if we go back to why we're writing, you know, there are so many ways in which we can reach audiences now that are different to traditional publishing routes. I think if we just go back to that sense of why stories are important, that strikes me as just a really important point that you've made, just going back to the sense of why we do it and how vital it is.
Mm-hmm. That's a very, very important point. When we write for many, many different reasons, and sometimes the reasons that we think we're writing for are, as it were, on the surface. There are other layers of meaning in what we create. I think one of the most interesting things as a writer is how when you create a story, in a sense it goes forth into the world and takes on different meanings for the people who come across it. Just as if you, if you're a child, you don't view yourself as just a product of your parents. You create your own life. And in a way, what we make as writers, we give our stories out to the world, to the audience, and people will find different meanings in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That's really fascinating. I know that I read Christopher Vogler's The Writer's Journey. I haven't, for my sins, read the original Joseph Campbell, but I know for those people who are aware of Christopher Vogler's work, it builds on the work of Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, and it's sort of hugely influential in Hollywood screenwriting. Your book is doing something different, I think. I wonder whether you were influenced in any way by Vogler, or if not, if you had other influences that I suppose in the writing of your book in particular, beyond the sort of mythic influences, I suppose, in terms of your intention.
One of my guiding lights has got to be Joseph Campbell, his seminal work, The Hero's Journey, or his more accessible transcript of an interview, The Power of Myth. It's a very, very readable book. He talks about the importance of the archetypal figures, in particular the hero in our lives. He was obviously very impressed by Carl Jung. And he talks about the way that the hero's journey is repeated again and again in the stories of our culture. Vogler builds on this. Vogler's a very useful template. It's a good tool book. It's quite a detailed book. It's a useful thing to have. And as you say, applies particularly to modern movie scripts. Mm. He looks at ancient Greek figures and modern movies and analyzes the hero in them. I think that a more important influence, in addition to Joseph Campbell, the other major influence in was Julia Cameron, whose book The Artist's Way is a wonderful exploration of what it is to be creative, how to be creative. She brings together many, many strands, very inspirational sort of book with practical exercises, quotations, inspiration from a range of sources, and I would thoroughly recommend it to anybody involved in the creative life. We as humans are all involved in creating.
I think that was one of the really interesting things for me in your book is just the way in which you set it out. There is that sense of a kind of workbook about it, that almost you look at these different archetypes and then you tell a story relating to that archetype, or you give us a story, and then you ask us, the reader, to draw on that and to look at parts of ourselves that might relate to that archetype. So it seems to me, as you say, I can see how it relates to the artist's way, because there's a lot of material there in terms of, I suppose, personal growth work, but also work in relation to looking at our own personal stories. It strikes me from that point of view that it could be a really useful tool for people who are thinking about writing memoir as well. Do you think that's a valid use for
Absolutely.
It for memoir writers?
Absolutely. I think that it's very important when we're looking at our personal story that we understand the figures that we've, as it were, created. Because, of course, when we see someone as being a certain character, as being in a certain way, we project certain attributes onto them, and people tend to comply and behave exactly as we expect them to. In other words, if we distrust someone, they'll tend not to rise to anything better than being distrusting, as it were. And so I think it's very important that we're aware of how we in our own lives, and consequently in our history and our personal history, may have projected characteristics onto other people and, for example, seen somebody as a bad mother.
Mm-hmm.
Once we're aware of that, we can start to see patterns and threads in our experience. Of course, it's exactly analogous to the way in which when we create characters in our fictional writing, we use these constellations of attributes, and on the basis of just a small number of features, which can even be physical features, we project other things onto that person. So if I describe somebody as having a hooked nose and hunched shoulders and a sidelong glance, all these images of the Wicked Witch instantly start to arise. And of course, they may not be relevant to that person at all, but we can either use or break these stereotypes in our work.
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting what you say about breaking them, because I know that when I read Vogler, that was my fear. That one would fall into, that these archetypes represented some kind of stereotype almost. And actually, I was really interested to see that he actually broke that down right at the beginning of the book to say, no, these are actually types that are already there in our imagination, but it's what we do with them that makes it makes the story interesting, effectively. What do you think about this idea that, I said people might fear coming to this kind of work because they fear that their characters might become stereotypes if they work with archetypes?
That's a very important point. In fact, once we become aware of the archetypes, we're liberated from them. One of the things which I discuss in LifeWorks is how each archetype will have, as it were, a counterpart. You have a light and a dark aspect of each character. So the inverse of the hero, who works for the good of the community, is the trickster, who's wily and devious and self-serving. But of course, light and dark are necessary counterparts. It's like yin and yang, day and night. The two go together. One of the things that we do as writers when we're creating fictional work is often, in order to highlight the attributes of the protagonist, we'll have an antagonist. Now, the archetypes allow us to play with these ideas, to highlight the similarities between the protagonist and the antagonist, and often to see how they have each other's characteristics. Because, of course, what makes it especially poignant for the heroine or hero of a book is when they have to fight against someone who is very like themselves, but has just made slightly different choices in life, and that highlights the character that we're creating.
And I think it's interesting as well because, stories do get retold in different ways throughout the ages. And as you were talking earlier about myths being a very successful story, we can learn from that what makes a successful story. And then when we're reading other stories, we can actually start to recognize the archetypes and how writers may have played with them and used them. And hopefully that can feed into our own writing. Tell me... about, there's another side to this, which you've touched on, about the idea of, using this for, I suppose, writing what you call one's own life script. Can you describe or explain to me what a life script is in your terms?
A life script is your own personal template of the world. Each of us has our own, what I would call a personal mythology. Now, just as a mythology, say Greek mythology, consists of a range of characters and a variety of stories, we have those things in our own lives. So in Greek mythology, you'll have people who have similar adventures, Perseus and Theseus, for example. You'll have contrasting adventures for the same character. So Heracles undergoes his 12 labors, and some of them use brute force, and some of them have to use a lot more cleverness and introspection to get what he wants to achieve. In the same way, we each have a pantheon of people in our world and a series of stories that we tell about ourselves. The people in our world, we will have chosen, we will have, to a very large extent, decided the types of characters that we want to have in our lives, and we'll have included people in our life stories who we want to have there. And we will also have a series of tales that we tell about our past. So when you tell me about yourself, I'll be forming an image of who you are. But even more importantly, when you tell me about yourself, you'll be telling yourself who you are and what matters to you and what you're proud of in your life. Once we're aware of this process, we can start to take control of it. We can say, I'd like slightly changed characters in my life, and this is what I want to do next in my personal story.
Do you have any sort of... hints and tips almost, just to sort of pass on, or examples of how you've seen somebody sort of change their life script, or how that might work, or how we might get stuck in a life script, the opposite of that.
I think one of the obvious examples is this: if somebody's in a series of relationships with a friend or a lover, and they seem to have a sense of familiarity, a sense of this friendship is becoming very intense, and I know that sooner or later it's all going to blow up, and we need to be aware of those patterns, and then we can be proactive. We can actually take control of what's happening in our lives and decide that we're going to change it next time round.
And one quotation which particularly struck me, which I think I put on Twitter this week, so you know this struck me, was something you said was, the way we interpret events is more important than external factors in determining what we will experience next. Can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
I think that it's very important that when we do look at what's happening in our lives, that we try to see it in terms of opportunities, rather than just repeating patterns. There's that old saying about life gives you lemons and you make lemonade. It's very important that we try to perceive the opportunities. I do believe that although there are things outside our control, and obviously natural disasters and incidents that occur to us, I do believe that life is 20% what happens. And as long as we hold that in our minds, even when we have the buffeting of daily life, we can still have a sense of moving forward. And this relates back to writing as well. There'll be days when one just doesn't feel like writing, but as a writer, every so often you just have to make yourself sit down and start doing it, and you can create something. Even on those bad days, you can usually get something out if you just start working in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a few ways in which you, or a way in which you sort of see your book as being, I suppose, specifically useful for writers. Why do you see your book as, to an extent, as a kind of writer's toolkit?
Very much so. It's a handbook that we can use either for constructing our personal life story in terms of what we do, or in terms of what we create. There are a series of stories drawn from myths and legends from around the world, one for each of the archetypal characters, plus a 13th for archetypal stories, and each story illustrates one of the archetypal characters. There's an introduction to each story, giving examples from books and films, so that you can start to learn to recognize this character when it occurs. And once you have recognized the main attributes of this archetype, as it has meaning for you, because it will be different for each of us. In other words, we fill in the features on the basis of personal experience, so that, for example, your hero may look surprisingly like your favourite film star, and your image of a trickster will be based on experiences that you've had. Once you're aware of that, then you can start to develop your own characters. There are exercises in the book for people to relate to the different archetypal characters and to the themes that occur in a story.
Thank you. And can you tell me as well about your own journey to publication? At what point did you conceive of writing a book about your work?
I suppose it's been coming together for a long time. I teach myths, and I've been writing for years. When I actually decided to create this particular book, I sat down and I wrote it in about 8 months, and then bravely sent it off to a range of publishers and got my first rejection letter. I was so proud of that, like a badge of honour. But I was very lucky in that I sent it to a publisher who wrote that, "This is not quite for me, but I think I know an agent who would be able to help you." Mm-hmm. And if you can get an agent, it's extremely helpful, because, of course, they're very good at being able to identify the right your work. Mm-hmm. And so I was lucky enough to get taken on by this agent. She was then able to place the book with John Hunt, who are a medium-sized publisher, not one who I would necessarily have thought of otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend bravery, a skin thicker than a rhino's, and also the willingness to take help wherever it comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that sort of grabbing that opportunity as well, isn't it? Funnily enough, an interesting example of that, how you see your life script, occurred to me as you spoke, because somebody I was working with recently received a letter, not somebody in the Completion Club, I hasten to add, received a letter from an agent that was actually very sort of positive and helpful, and said that the agent would be interested in a second draft, and the person was absolutely despairing at this email, and I was saying, no, this is a good thing. This agent is interested.
Absolutely.
You know, so yes, grab those opportunities. What interesting to hear about you writing it in 8 months. Did you have a kind of, I suppose, what motivated you to do it in that period of time? That's a real achievement to write a book in an 8 month period. Did you have to really discipline yourself? Did you write every day? I know writers are always keen to know about the working habits of others. What were your working habits like in that period? And were you juggling a lot of other things?
Absolutely. I think I became one of those typical insomniac writers. I'd be up at 5 in the morning and write for an hour and a half. I learned the hard way that if I don't write a story when it comes to me, that it's never as good if I just sort of put it on hold to do later. So I decided that whilst I was inspired, I was just going to write and go for it. I think it's very important when you have an idea to jot it down at once and ideally start working on it at once. So I would advocate that, carrying your moleskin notebook everywhere in your bag, so that when a phrase comes to you, when an idea comes to you, you just scribble it down and then you get it into your work as fast as possible. There's no time like the present when it comes to writing. You've just got to find time to it, because there'll always be other things to do.
Mm.
You just have to prioritise it.
And did you tend to, when you were writing, did you tend to write in short bursts or longer stretches of time?
I can do about an hour and a half, but once you get up to 3 hours, I find it's like driving. You become rather dazed, and you have to get up and have your cup of coffee.
Mm. Well, luckily, your book is out there now. Are there plans for any more in the pipeline, or are you having a break at the moment whilst you get on with the marketing, or where are you at in terms of thinking about your own writing career now?
Well, I have started a collection of short stories that may see publication one day. They're also great fun as a tool for teaching, for workshops and so on. So yes, the writing does still happen. It's a habit that it's hard to break once you've got going, I think. If I do publish that, I'm looking in particular at the relationship patterns again that we have in our lives, and how we perhaps expect there to be a happy ever after, the point in our lives at which we can sit back and go, phew, you know, that's how it all worked out. But of course there isn't. We're constantly creating. And I think that's one of the important aspects of the creation. I'd quite like to read out a little passage from my book.
Do that, if that would be okay.
Absolutely.
This is,
That would be a nice way
to sort of segue into the questions, perhaps.
This is from the end of the book, the section on personal mythology. The pattern of your own life is hard to see. We're often too close to view things objectively. A tapestry is woven from the reverse side. You can only see the image once you turn it over. It's not always clear where you're going, nor why things turned out the way they did. Life has to be lived forwards, but read backwards. You can only see the plot of your story, how one thing led to another, in retrospect. It's often difficult to identify turning points in your own history, but the most important moments of change are there. Developing your personal mythology is the work of a lifetime. Some people start this work earlier than others, but they won't finish any sooner. It's never too late to be what you might have been. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jane. Great. So really lovely to have some writers on the line today. Would anybody like to dive in first with a question? Somebody going to be brave?
It's Catherine here. I was just having a quick read of the extracts of your book on Amazon, and I was the little mini story I read was about the good girl, and I was quite interested in what you'd said about you take the archetype and you use it to not be too standard. So you shouldn't be afraid of just having baddies and goodies marching through your novel. And the bit I really liked in that story was when the good girl says, I know there's something wrong with the baby because it doesn't want to go back to its mother. It's indifferent between being held by its mother or it's being held by me. Mm. And I was actually quite interested as to whether that was a bit that you'd made up following your own examples, or whether that was in the actual archetypal story that you'd found, wherever you'd found it.
That was something that I put in. I just used the outline of the story. It was a very brief form that was originally told to me, and so I made the characters more real by putting in options and thoughts for them.
Because that was the thing that I really thought this is really showing me what you mean by saying no, don't be afraid of the archetype.
I found it really interesting, actually, Catherine. You know, I haven't read all of Jane's book yet, but just to sort of start to think about archetypes and what I've read in the Vogler as well, I have these real conceptions that I didn't want to go there because I was so afraid that it would just make things very standard. And in fact, I found it's been really the opposite. I've been using some of it in relation to my young adult novel. To actually, it's things like these characters of the trickster. You can have these types, but you start recognizing them. So you might, even if it is in the Hollywood movies, you see a Harry Potter movie, and you think, oh, that's the trickster there. And then you start to think, oh, who's the trickster in my story? I don't have a trickster. Maybe I should do. You know, and then it sort of sparks things off, I found. So I think it's quite fascinating because it allows us to... I mean, that image in itself for me, the trickster, it's somebody who the reader doesn't know, maybe the reader doesn't know if that person's good or bad, which is a really interesting thing to follow in a story. It sort of sparks off ideas, and then you can take them where you will. I was wondering, Jane, whether in your own short stories, how the archetypes are influencing your fiction as you're starting to write fiction.
I think the archetypes are absolutely key, and that example of the trickster is a very interesting one because you can use it both in your personal life or for the hero in your story. There'll be times when the hero or heroine is saving the world, but there'll be other times when just bulldozing their way through in the cause of right is never going to work. And sometimes we have to say, actually, it's time to use the power of the trickster. One of my students gave me a wonderful story, which you'll relate to in terms of the builders next door. The builders next door to them insisted.